This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Duncan Gemmy. How are you, Duncan?
Very good, thank you, yes.
Excellent, excellent. You are a wine merchant from Hitchin in Hertfordshire.
Yes.
And the reason we've got you on the show is because you guys recently won the IWC Wine Club of the Year.
Yes.
So we thought, well, get the best, have a chat to the best and see what's going on. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what your business is first? Because it is it's a hybrid business.
Yep.
You see them about, and there's one in Teddington just down the road. But do you want to tell us what it is?
So, as you said, hybrid model of both bar and shop. So our shop is deliberately focusing on kind of less but better. A very small, well-curated range that we change seasonally. No more than 100 wines at any given time. Then we've got a bar. Inside, you're maybe talking 22 covers, maybe an additional 10 outside if the weather plays ball. And there's an ever-changing range of wines by the glass. All the bottles can be drunk in. And we have a nice small food menu on offer as well. Then we have some events and, of course, the wine club itself, which is becoming a bigger and bigger part of our business as time goes on.
So what's it called?
So it's called the We Vinoteca. So Vinoteca, in essence, is kind of a translation of wine library. The idea that you can come in, you can browse, and you can try what is available. And obviously the We is reference to my Scottish roots and also a realistic kind of expression of what we are. We're focused on small and quality.
Yeah, We is a Scottish for small.
Exactly.
I'm from Dunedin and Dunedin was settled by the Scots, so I use the word We all the time.
Yeah.
It's not a common word necessarily.
No, it's very funny. We'll get people walking past and popping into the shop and almost like, oh, where's the Scottish person? There must be a Scottish person here. So it seems to resonate nicely with people, which is fun.
Nice. Okay. And your background was in architecture before you got into wine.
Yes.
Where did you study?
I studied in Dundee, in Scotland, and I loved it. I found it really, really interesting up until the point where it would be 3-hour lectures on concrete and how to detail a window so it didn't leak. I found that since then, a lot of the skills, kind of the design element, the project-based stuff has been really, really helpful. But if I'm honest, I would have been a distinctly average architect, whereas I like to think I'm quite good at this.
Do you know what? I would like to do a 3-hour lecture on concrete.
to be fair, that lecture was on a very early morning after student night, so I maybe wasn't in the right mindset for it, but yeah.
Nice. Okay, and when did you guys set up We Vinoteca?
We opened at the very end of 2018, and we basically managed to get into our shop for November and December Christmas trading as just a shop. We gave the walls a quick paint, we covered up the bits that needed work, and we put boxes of wine on the floor. It was very, very rustic, shall we say. And then after Christmas rush, we did the proper refurb and launched fully as this hybrid model.
And the hybrid model is, as you're saying, it's a bar and a shop.
Yes.
Does that mean that how do you charge your wine? Because obviously, do you sell this wine at the same price, whether it's a bar or it's a shop?
So we have a flat corkage. Which
is
£12.50.
Okay.
And so
reasonable.
That means that if you were to take some of our kind of more affordable wines, they still end up being very similarly, if not slightly under what you'd expect to pay for those wines in a bar. But then when you go and have a bottle of wine that, you know, retails at like £100 with us and you pay only £12.50 corkage, that thing becomes very nice. So yeah. I guess we do reward people who want to come and try some nice examples of wine, because most people that drink those sort of wines know how much they cost to buy and they know how much they are in a restaurant. And so if we can be practical and realistic about that.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Anything around £10 corkage is all right. There's a wee Thai restaurant up near us. It's £5 corkage. BYO. It's like, ah, oh, happy days.
Magic. Happy, yes. Especially day. For you guys. Yeah, that's
yeah.
perfect.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, sort of thing. So, yeah. No. Cool. Okay. You won the IWC Wine Club of the Year.
Yes.
But you've talked about your bar and you've talked about your wine shop. So just tell us a little bit about the wine club itself.
So the wine club was initially set up to give the experience of sommelier, but in a wine club format. So we wanted to kind of be the opposite of one size fits all. The starting point was I had a very good customer who asked me to put together a case of wine, and we did some nice notes for him and he loved it. And a couple of months later, he said, can you do the same thing again? And I said, I'd love to, but I'm going to pick you different wines this time because I now understand you and your preferences a bit more. And so we did him the second case. And by the third case, he kind of said, let's just make this a direct debit. And he told some of his friends. And it started almost naturally from there that we were going out of our way and finding wines for people based on what they liked and what they disliked. And it very organically grew from there. So the wine club is about helping people to explore wine, customizing their cases so that you're not getting the same wine as everyone else. You know, if you're someone that adamantly doesn't like Chardonnay, I'm not going to give you Chardonnay, but I'll also introduce you to things that you might not even know you like. So very personal, very experience driven, really is what we're aiming for.
Okay. Your wine club is limited, I think, to 200 people with a wait list. Why would you limit your sales?
We're limiting the amount of people that we can take on at any given moment. So because what we're doing is very bespoke to each person, we can only do that for so many people at any one time. And especially now that we've won the award, the worst thing that can happen is we win an award for offering a great service, we grow too quickly, and we drop the ball on service. Mm-hmm. And so about a year ago, we kind of said, we know that we can take this number of people in this time frame and still maintain the quality of what we want to be doing. Because that's the more important thing to us, is to do it right than to do it big. And so we are trying to grow slowly as fast as possible. And so we are looking at the way we're doing it so we can take on slightly more people. And we're doing kind of weekly or fortnightly releases of spaces. We will continue to grow, but not at the expense of the quality of the experience. I want everyone who gets in to enjoy that experience. And the waitlist is kind of a realistic way for us to do that.
Okay. And how long is your waitlist?
So the waitlist, in theory, it can be quite short because the spaces are sold first come, first serve. So you go on the waitlist, and when spaces open, we let everyone know. I have had some days where that's sold out in minutes. I've had some days where that's sold out in hours. It kind of depends how quickly you can get on the thing. Everyone who joins will get an email and a text when it opens, and then it's fair game. So you could join it now and join in a week's time. Or if you're not quite quick enough, you might have to wait a few weeks.
I don't quite follow that, actually. So when I join your list...
Yes.
Is it a monthly case, or is it regular, or is it...
So when you join, you'll get a case of wine delivered to you every 2 months.
Every 2 months, yeah.
But to get the first case, so to speak, there is a waiting list. So people will join the waiting list, and when we've got the capacity to take on more people, we'll send out kind of a warning email saying in 2 days' time, we're going to release some spaces. And then in that 2 days' time, we'll take on X number of people. And then once we've got their cases all built and we've got everything set up, we'll say, great, we can do our next release in 2 weeks' time. And so it's not like you're number one in the queue and the person behind you is number two. It's we can get the wait list to a point and then release spaces accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And but so you're increasing your list all the time. What is it now?
We are at 220 now, I think. So we will continue to grow in size. As we get bigger, we'll be able to do more with it. We'll be able to start getting exclusive allocations from winemakers. We'll be able to start putting more time and effort into the kind of additional resources. So it's not about not wanting to grow. It's about wanting to grow in a way that is sustainable to the business, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And how many people work in the business?
So we've got myself working full-time, and I've got two other members of staff that are full-time. We then have a handful of part-time staff. Some of them are working in the bar in a part-time capacity, but then we've also got a great guy who is an actor. And so he's technically part-time, but he kind of, when he's there, he's in essence working full-time. But then he might disappear for a month or two. So we've got a small team, but... all the team have got WSET2 or higher. You know, we've got another guy who's doing his diploma as we speak. Our bar manager's just finished her three. So it allows us to have a good team of people that know what they're doing, not only on the wine side, but also on the kind of customer experience and the operation side.
And the limitation and capacity for the wine club, is that because you do the picking, or is it just it's you doing the picking? And the first time you do a case with someone, you have to think about it first? Or
yeah, so I mean, to put it in context, last week I was picking the wines that are going to go into the December and January cases. So we're always operating quite far ahead of time. And what I'm doing is saying, here are some wines that we've tried throughout the course of the year that I think will be excellent for Christmas time. So there's some really nice Chardonnays that I've been saving up, some nice kind of lighter style reds, Grenache-based stuff, some really nice Portuguese wines that I think will offer kind of great value seafood starter dishes. And so for the different price ranges and the different kind of case splits that we've got, we're building these different templates, if you will. And then we're going through each customer and comparing their preferences with that template. And if we're going through and go, oh, hold on, here's John Smith, and he doesn't like Grenache, but we've given him one. So for his case, we need to swap that out and we'll give him this thing instead.
Yeah, yeah.
And the picking of the template is done by me, and the double checking against that customer profile is done by me. And that is a manual process. And we want to keep that to a degree manual. You know, I want to double check everything, but that is within itself a time consuming process, really, to make sure that we get everyone's case right for them.
And will you bring on staff to do that in the future?
I think out of all the things we do, that's probably the hardest thing to work out how to bring on staff to do. I think that the other parts of the business, we can get a lot of help in terms of the, I don't have a strength for spelling and grammar. And so it's much easier to say, here's someone who's great at that. You can help me by proofreading the tasting notes that we're doing and the magazine that we're doing. Or you can help with the building and delivering. The picking of the wine bit is not only the hardest, but if I'm honest, it's probably the bit I'm least wanting to let go of. I love it. It's a very big jigsaw puzzle to solve, but it's also kind of the best bit of the job. You know, I get to look at people who I know their name and their preferences and everything about them. And I get to say, like, what would this person love to try? And so I think realistically, we might find a way to use technology to help make that process easier, but it will always be something that I'm doing as much as possible.
How do you get feedback from the customer so you know what they like or dislike?
So the feedback operates at the moment in a couple of ways. We're sending out emails fairly regularly and just saying, you know, how did you get on? Was there anything you loved or you didn't love? We get it from some of our customers in the shop. So for example, last night in the shop, we held this very fun event. It's an event we only offer to those in the subscription. And basically what we do is we order a load of samples in and we get them to taste them. So our staff taste them during the day. And then in the evening, we invite our customers in and we're kind of saying to them, is this the sort of thing that you would find interesting in the subscription going forward? And that's a really nice thing because you've got us all in the same space and we can have the conversation and say, oh, this is like that wine you gave us X months ago. And that was fantastic. So that's how it operates at the moment. There is definitely, we're working at the moment on a more kind of concrete customer-facing portal so that we can collect that easier and kind of manage that data more importantly, because ultimately that's what makes it special.
Okay, no, that sounds cool. And where do you source your wines? Because it sounds like you've got relationships with some vineyards, but for a small business like you, you need to use a wholesaler, I would have thought.
Yeah, so I use established importers. I don't particularly want to get too heavy into the importing myself. If I'm honest, I can recognize my strengths and weaknesses, and I'm not the guy who's going to be
Logistics.
Yeah, I'm not going to have fun doing that. So what we are doing at the moment is working with established importers. But what we have also done is gone to places, you know, we've got a producer in Puglia that we love. And when we've gone out there previously, we've tried wines that don't currently come into the UK that we also love. And where we think we could go is we could start taking wines and say to our established importer, the next time you're ordering from them, can you order a pallet of that wine, bring it in for us, and we will be able to use that as a exclusive in the subscription. So, yeah, I think there's lots of great wine coming into the UK. Mm. I don't necessarily think that my role is to overly add to the amount of wine coming in. It's to help people make sense of it. I don't know that people necessarily need more choice as much as they need better choice.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You did work in hospitality for a while. You did some, like, you've got your WSET diploma, yep. But you also did some of the quartermaster sommeliers as well.
Yes.
And you worked in hospitality. Was that in Scotland?
Yeah, so I worked in hospitality a little bit through university. I worked at it in Australia, and it was in Australia that I got into wine. On coming back from Australia, I wanted to do something, open up a bar or a restaurant. And my wine knowledge was criminally underrated. And I basically managed to get myself a job at a Michelin star restaurant as a sommelier by honestly saying to them, my knowledge is low at the moment, but give me a chance, because I do know how to do cocktails and coffee and all that sort of stuff. Give me a chance as a sommelier. I promise you within 3 months of hiring me, I'll be qualified as a sommelier. And if I'm not, you can fire me. And so within 3 months, I went off and did the quartermaster sommelier, became certified as a sommelier. And luckily that was enough to land me the job. So I was there for a couple of years as both the sommelier and then the assistant manager role, whilst also being the sommelier. It was kind of a juggling two roles at the same time. Yeah. And I think that's really fed a lot of what we do. When you get to work in the Michelin star world and you get to see the value of creating experiences so good that it blows people's mind, you don't really want to do things any other way. So when we do the wine club, when we do our events and we do things at the bar, it's very customer focused. Like, how can we create a really excellent experience for them? Because if you do that right, they'll tell everyone. They want to tell everyone that they've had this great experience. And so we try and focus on that a lot.
Okay. In a couple of interviews I've read that you've done, you talk about wanting to keep the good bits of hospitality, but not necessarily the bad bits. So what are the good bits of hospitality and what are the bad bits from your point of view? Because everybody's different.
You know, I think if you look at when I was working as a sommelier, I said the good bits were definitely getting to make people's day. And I loved that. And I also loved getting to work with people that were incredibly passionate about what they do. You know, it's the benefit of our industry, and you can extend this to the hospitality industry with people who work in the kitchen as well. Everyone loves what they do. We don't get into wine to be millionaires because it's a sensible thing. We get in because we love it. And I think that's a great experience to work in. You know, realistically, when I was a sommelier, I would probably do 80 to 85 hour weeks. And I had 2 days off. I slept for one of those days. You know, that was something that was okay to do because I was learning and I was gaining the industry experience. But long term, it's very hard. And so I guess, you know, at the moment, I get to do a couple of evenings a week in the bar, and I get to do the wine club, and we get to do all these other things, but I'm not doing as crazy hours as I used to.
Okay, so it was the hours that you found difficult?
You know, I think that the hospitality industry can just be a very difficult thing. There's much less so now, but there was definitely a period of time where the way that people acted or treated in hospitality was always a bit tough. You know, there was that kind of Gordon Ramsay school of hardcore hospitality work. And that was part and parcel of it when I was doing it. But I guess my focus has always been on trying to make a great workplace. And that's probably what we've taken into it. You know, like, how can we make a nice place to work where people get to focus on doing a thing they love?
Hmm. I had a look at your wine list before you came over. And actually, you kindly brought us a bottle of the one wine I thought was really interesting on that, which was the white Merlot from Bordeaux, which I thought, oh, that's an unusual wine.
Yeah.
But a lot of your list, you have things like Portuguese wines in there, and you've got some classicals, but it's not, I wouldn't call it a classical wine list in any way, shape or form. How have your customers dealt with that? And Are they happy? Have you seen your customers' preferences change because you're showing a slightly different range from the norm?
Our aim, as I said, is not to have the biggest range, but to have the best range. And so if you are someone that comes in and wants to browse our section of classic Burgundies, you're going to be a bit disappointed. If you're someone that comes in and really enjoys wine, likes trying new things, and in particular enjoys trying nice wines with food and are less concerned about the prestige behind it and more the quality of what's in, I think you'll get on great with what we're doing both in the shop and the wine club. We do, as you say, have classic things. If I find a classic example of a classic wine that over-delivers on value, I'm really happy on that. But I would also be very happy to introduce someone to something weird and wonderful. So, you know, we lean heavily into countries like Portugal and Greece. And so it's the sort of thing that if you come in and say, I typically drink Rioja, I can be like, okay, I do have a really classic Rioja and it's lovely. But I also have this lovely wine from Portugal and it actually uses the main grape of Rioja in it as well. I think it's great. I think it offers better value for money. And if you'd like to try something a bit different, I'm really confident you'd enjoy this. And so I guess my idea is that my job is to help people explore. By having a smaller range, they can feel confident that if we've picked it, it's gone through a set of processes to be there. And so when they come in and they try something that is a Zeno Mavro from Greece, there's an element of trust that it must be good.
Zeno Mavros, they can be very tannic.
Yeah, I mean, and it's such a confusing thing, you know, when you get these great varieties or these countries or these regions that people have never heard of. And again, the benefit of the hybrid model is that 9 times out of 10, we either are serving it by the glass. And so we can be like, here you go, try it, because we can talk about it all day. But if you try it, you'll know. Or sometimes we just say, screw it. We will open it for you. You can try it. And if not, we'll use it within the bar. So like the thing like the white Merlot that you're talking about is such a cool wine. But no one's naturally going to pick that off the shelf. You'd have to be in like an 11 out of 10 on the adventure scale to pick it off the shelf. But the second we put it on by the glass, everyone wants to try it and everyone loves it. And that becomes a really good point of difference for us as a bar and shop.
Okay. What's your favorite wine?
This is tough. I have this conversation a lot. My favorite wine ever, if we had to really, really pin it down, is Jim Barry McRae Wood Shiraz.
Okay.
So when I was working as a sommelier, it was kind of the first premium wine that I was able to sell confidently. And then Tom Barry came over and took a bunch of us out for like a steak dinner. And I basically got to do like the wine geek version of hang out with a celebrity. And then by pure fluke, about a month later, I went on my date with my now wife, Hannah. And that was the first bottle of wine we had together. And I'm not saying that my wine chat was what sealed the deal in terms of her thinking that I'd be a suitable match, but it probably showed me in a pretty good light. And so the wine is lovely, but the memories associated with that bottle are as lovely, if not more.
Perfect. All right there, mate. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Lovely.
Cheers very much.
Thank you.